Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patrick and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Our show today is brought to you from Moda Fabrics. Beautiful, beautiful fabrics you can find online at your favorite quilt shops and in your favorite quilt shops next door, wherever you are. So I am excited to be talking to Krista Hennebury. She has a new book out called Make It, Take It, and the book is fabulous. It has got projects galore. And I also found out she loves to run retreats and what quilters don't love to go and sew with somebody else. And so she's here to chat about it with me. Hi, Krista.
Hi, Pat.
This is fun. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
You know, your website, so everybody knows what it is poppyprintcreate.blogspot.com. And I first must congratulate you on your ribbon for your absolutely beautiful, beautiful quilt called Blackbird Fly.
Thank you so much. That was such a lovely surprise to receive when I got to Austin last week.
So this was at the QuiltCon 2015, and you got a first place in a category called Use of Negative Space. Tell me about that quilt, because people can see it on your website. It is fantastic.
Thank you. That quilt is really special to me, and it was complete, actually, for the first QuiltCon that was held 2 years ago, but I was too nervous to put it in the mail at that point because it was had taken me a long time to make, and it was very special. It was this very first quilt I made specially just for myself. Mm-hmm. And it was made completely on retreats with my friends and sewn 100% on my mother-in-law's featherweight, which I inherited. Oh. And the song, to many people, is meaningful, and to me it is as well. And it was my desire to create a quilt where you had to really look carefully to decipher the words so that you considered each one of them individually as you read the quilt. Mm-hmm. And it was that negative space between the words, which, according to the judges, is what captivated them. And I never considered really the negative space. I really only always considered the words. Mm-hmm. So it was a lovely surprise.
Isn't that funny when you can, like, see how other people see your work and it's not how you see it?
Yeah, well, I think with such a personal project, it's hard to imagine how other people see it, but seeing the reaction of people in the various shows that quilt has been shown in has been very nice for me to see that it brings a smile to people's faces, and almost everyone has a ready story about that song and what it means to them.
And now when people go to your site, will you have like a little link to it on the sidebar so they can go read your story?
I haven't, but in the post I wrote about winning the ribbon, there is a link to a post I did for the Bloggers Quilt Festival a couple of years ago, which explains the story of that quilt.
Oh, very good, very good. So let's talk about retreats, because I want to talk about that first, because people love to sew together. And how did you discover that you loved getting together with other people to sew?
Well, I started quilting about 15 years ago when my children were really small and my husband traveled a lot for work. And it didn't take long for me to dive right in, like most people, and become completely addicted. And within a year and a half, I was working at my local quilt store. Mm-hmm. At the shop, I was meeting a lot of other younger quilters who were quilting all alone without friends, whose friends felt that it was an activity for older people and they weren't that interested. And so I tried to connect a lot of these younger quilters together in a Friday night sew-in that we held at the shop, and we would sew from 6 p.m. till midnight. A couple of years later, the store actually closed down, and it was those gals who wanted to keep getting together. They had formed really strong friendships. Mm-hmm. So my day retreat business was born from necessity of keeping these women together and keeping them motivated to quilt. I first went on an overnight retreat through that shop about 13 years ago, and I could not believe how wonderful it felt to be surrounded by women who shared the same passion I shared and who were just so kind and giving. And what struck me about my very first overnight retreat was that it didn't matter how old anyone was or how experienced a quilter they were, we all had such a fun time together. I think it helped that none of us had to do housework or cook.
It's always a bonus. Go to retreat. No housework, no cooking. That's my requirement. You know, I don't want to have to do it. That is so fun. And the fact that it was interesting to you to see that there is no age criteria when you quilt. It's like everybody's a quilter no matter what.
Yeah, and that everyone can have fun together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you run these retreats. Where do you run them at?
They're held at a community hall, which is in a little village north of Vancouver. It's on the way to Whistler, which is a famous ski place that most people have heard of, I think. Mm-hmm. It's about an hour out of town, and it overlooks the ocean of Howe Sound, and the sun streams in the windows, and, well, on sunny days it does. It did yesterday or Saturday, the last time we were there. There's a kitchen there, so I cater all the food, and my husband and I set up the hall with tables. There's 25 people at retreat. Everyone gets their own banquet table. And I supply iron stations and raised tables for cutting and basting quilts. You know, we have a show and tell. We have tea time with cookies and goodie bags and door prizes, and we have a lot of fun. My husband makes amazing music playlists, and sometimes I just have to turn the music off because there's so much chatting and laughter. It gets just crazy loud. It's a great group of women.
So when you decide to write a book, you wrote the book, Make It, Take It, 16 Cute and Clever Projects to Sew with Friends. Did this come about from the retreats, or how did it come about?
Yeah, it kind of did. Not only do I run the day retreat business, but I also have a four-day retreat every November for 28 women. And, you know, I kept seeing women showing up with, they'd walk into the retreat hall with five tote bags over each arm, a machine in their hand, and dragging their suitcase behind them. And I sort of felt like, I think there's a way we can do this a bit better. So I contacted Martingale with a proposal of a book filled with projects that would help people get their gear and themselves to retreat, and then some projects, suggestions that they could sew when they got there with their friends. And I rounded up a group of my blogging friends and, you know, let them know the sort of story of the book and the fact that I was trying to create a retreat within, you know, two book covers. Mm-hmm. And people came up with fantastic ideas of projects we could include and to also write small retreat stories that they themselves had experienced. So, you know, it's kind of a retreat in a book.
I love the stories. That was such a great idea.
Thanks. It's it came together really well. I'm very proud of all the projects, and especially some of the really innovative storage projects that people came up with.
Yeah. So when you did some of the projects, and your buddies did some of the projects. Did you assign things, or did you all sort of brainstorm like you were saying first?
We didn't brainstorm as a group, but I contacted people who I thought might be interested in participating and gave them I had a few projects in mind already, mm-hmm. and then my publisher had suggested a couple of ideas, and so I just sort of made a list and said, would anyone like to create some of these things? And for some people, you know, quilts is just what they do, so mm-hmm. they created some beautiful quilt patterns. I have a couple of friends who are designers of more things, so bags and totes and things like mm-hmm. that. And so we just worked together to offer a variety of projects for the book.
What is one of the projects that you did in the book?
I have a large quilt that is based on a traditional quilt block, the pine tree, but I updated it in modern colors and called it Orange Grove. So it's the pine tree block done in orange and aqua, and the blocks are set on point with a lot of negative space, which showcases Krista Withers' stunning modern machine quilting. Also in the book, Krista has included a two-page essay on her ghost quilting technique, which is a great way for people to start straight-line quilting in negative space. Mm-hmm. And then I have a group activity in the book, which I'm excited about. It involves making six lap-size quilts in about 2 hours with five friends. So there's six people involved, everyone brings their own color of fabric from the rainbow, and you sit around a table and pass your center block around and around and around, and when it comes back to you, you've got a lap-sized quilt top.
I love that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That sounds like so much fun.
So the girls at Martingale, I think 12 staff members there did that as an afternoon activity to prepare for the blog hop, which is going to be their story on their day of the blog hop for the book. And they had a ball, which I was happy to hear.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, it's like a round robin, but it's instantaneous.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Instantaneous round robins. So we have just a short bit here before we wrap up. What are you currently working on, Krista?
Well, I have a new improvisational quilting technique that I've been teaching lately, and I'm going to be teaching in several places, actually around the world this year, that I'm super excited about. Mm. After the precision and accuracy and editing of the book project, I wanted to move into a little bit more freedom in my work. And so I came up with this really fun technique, which is sort of meant to be a bridge for traditional quilters who want to try improvisation, but they're not quite ready to let go of their rulers and their rotary cutters and their quarter inch seam allowance. So that's what I've been working on lately.
And
yes, I do. And I know that many people want to try this new improvisational design, but it can be scary to let go of working from patterns and having a plan. And I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. So this is what you're teaching. And that's the picture that I showed of the orange and navy quilt.
Yes. That was a quilt that I made as a free pattern of the month for the Modern Quilt Guild newsletter. It came out in September.
Yeah. So when you're teaching this, what is the one tip that you can give people about sort of freeing up?
I guess the one tip is to not start with a vision of the end. And that is, by that I mean, let yourself play and have fun with fabric. I mean, it is only fabric. And let something evolve and make discoveries along the way that you can feel good about when you produce a completely original product at the end of your quilting. And although we make this quilt with the same technique, there is no way that two people could create the exact same quilt, even if they used all the same colors of fabric. And that's what I like about it. For many people, this could be their very first original quilt, not made from a pattern.
Krista, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat. I love chatting with you today.
100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
The 1 million pillowcase challenge is hitting the road. Come sew with the staff of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine at the Sewing and Stitchery Expo in Puyallup, Washington, February 26th through March 1st of 2015. Everything needed to make the pillowcases will be available for free. Pillowcases will be donated to the children being treated at Mary Bridge Children's Hospital. Stop by the Showplex and use your sewing skills to help a good cause. If you can't stay to make a pillowcase, no worries. Drop off your completed pillowcase to add to the total. See you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, tune in every Monday night during the debut episode of Paranoia Texas at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. And you will get a chance to win some very cool prizes from McDonald's, Walmart, Geek World, Red Petal Salon, and so much more. All you have to do is listen for the cue, and when you hear this music, call in. That's every Monday night at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, and win those cool prizes.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I cannot get enough of antique quilts. You know, anything that has to do with an antique quilt, has to do with the stories behind the antique quilt. I'm just very excited about it and want to know more. So out on Facebook, I follow a lot of the antique boards, and Sue Reich has been out there just sharing about her quilts and different things as a historian and a collector and an author. And I have some of her books, and one of her books is called Quilting News of Yesteryear, 1,000 Pieces and Counting. And there's some really interesting stuff in there about quilt makers and how they made and thought about quilt making. Just, I mean, to me, it related like how we think now. So I asked Sue to come on here and tell me about it and sort of her journey as a quilt maker. So hi, Sue. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
You know, this, I just love those, the history of quilts. When did you learn to quilt, or, you know, how did that enter your life?
Well, I was fortunate to be able to spend my summers growing up at my grandmother's farmhouse in northwestern Pennsylvania in Crawford County. And my grandmother didn't quilt, but she sewed, and she had quilts on her beds in the farmhouse. So so as she would be making her aprons or her curtains, she would give me the scraps, and I would cut out squares and piece them together in quilts. And so that was really the beginning of quilt making. She didn't have a television, only the radio, so we used to spend long afternoons and evenings making quilts, and it was very inspirational.
Now, when you did that as a child, did you continue on as a teenager and a young woman, or did it sort of leave you for a while and then you picked it up again?
Well, I learned sewing in my teenage years, and then when I was nesting back around the time of the bicentennial, I began making quilts for my children's beds, and then I didn't quilt for maybe through the 80s, and then we moved here to Connecticut, and they were beginning their documentation project of Connecticut quilts, so I became very interested in that process, and also continuing with quilt making after that. So that was sort of the beginning of my interest in the history of quilts.
That's when you took the leap. You leapt into a deep quilt making or deep quilt history. What part do you like about learning about antique quilts?
Well, to me, all the different aspects of quilt history are interesting. I began that process with the documentation of the Connecticut quilts here in my state, and we documented over 3,000 quilts that were pre-1850. And while I was researching for that book, Quilts and Quilt Makers Covering Connecticut, I became interested in other kinds of quilts, such as Quilts with Thousands of Pieces, which is the book that you referenced, and Crazy Quilts, and then World War II quilts, and World War I quilts, and Signature Quilts, and it goes on and on. So I don't know if I would be hard put to pick out one particular area of quilt history I would be interested in. Mm-hmm. Probably Connecticut quilts, World War II and World War I quilts, and lately I've been working on a project on presidential quilts, and that's very interesting also.
Oh, yeah. You know, your website is called coveringquilthistory.com, and so all of these things that Sue just mentioned, she sort of has sections out there, so if you want to go look a little bit more afterwards. Let's talk about these quilts with thousands of pieces, because I'm kind of in this scrap mode lately, and so when I was looking at, I picked this book up the other day before I contacted you, and I was reading in there about this newspaper article that you found where they were talking about a quilt that had, like 6,000 pieces. And then at the very end of this little thing about that quilt, it says, when that is beaten, we will try again. Like there's like a competition going on. What year was that?
So exactly. There were actually two times historically when, well, in the 19th century when that occurred. Once was back in the 1830s in the Charleston, Savannah areas when women were making quilts with thousands of pieces. And they were generally a one patch, such as a hexagon, a square, a diamond, or a triangle. And there was a little informal competition going on. And then that resurrected itself right around the time of our centennial celebration here in the United States, which was in 1876. And women started to informally challenge themselves to make quilts with thousands of pieces. And it is well recorded in the newspapers of the time. So my books are not only wonderful pictures of antique quilts and close-ups, but they're also the newspaper articles that are contemporary in time to the quilts that tell of a quilt that you have an image of. And so 1,000 Pieces and Counting will have quilts with thousands of pieces, contemporary with the newspaper articles from that time period. So around the time of the centennial, women started to make these quilts again. Many of them have centennial prints in them. The crazy quilt phenomena is actually just a part of that making quilts with thousands of pieces. And not only did they count the number of pieces in the quilts, they also sometimes counted the stitches that they put into the quilts at a very different time.
Yeah, I do know people that will count pieces now. It always surprises me because I'm sort of, that isn't where my brain is, Sue. And so somebody will say, oh my gosh, that block has, you know, 50 pieces in it and there's X number of blocks of quilt. And I'm like, no, don't count them. You'll make yourself crazy, you know. But it's fascinating. Do you have the book went through and you found all these different quilts. Did you have to go and hunt those up, or was it easy to find all of them from that time period?
Well, those of us that were involved in documentation projects or people that are appraisers often see these quilts come across their table. And it was always such an interest because it is such a sampler of fabric from the time period. Mm-hmm. Most of these quilts are very deep scrap bags. Some of them have fabric in them that will go back 50, 60 years. So it's not unusual to find a quilt from the 1880s that will have fabric in it from the 1830s. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you train yourself to date quilts, and you develop that eye to look at a print to date, you always date by the latest fabric. So if we see a quilt that has that span of fabric because the quilt maker had a very deep scrap bag, we always date for the newest fabric. And that's the date that we'll put on the quilt.
Yeah, I love the fact that that those of you who are historians and work with antiques so often can really pinpoint fabrics. Do you ever get confused or fooled and think, oh, this one's older or newer, and then find out it really isn't? Or is it pretty obvious?
Sometimes you'll find a quilt that's a generational quilt. In other words, it was started in one generation and then not finished until one or two generations later. So it's much like detective work, and you use the fabrics and the patterns as clues. But sometimes if you have a quilt that's such as a solid quilt that doesn't have a print, you have to then go by other things, such as whether the quilt has machine piecing in it anywhere, and then it cannot date earlier than a certain time period prior to sewing machines, obviously. But there's nothing really new in the quilt world. Everything except digital. Everything has been done before. Wonderful embroidery was done in the late 18th century, again in the late 19th century, in crazy quilts, just as women are putting wonderful embroidery into embellishment quilts today. Beading, metallic threads, all that has been done before. Mm-hmm. Machine quilting goes way back to around just right after the Civil War. And it is not unusual to find a machine-quilted continuous line pattern in mm-hmm. a quilt from the 1880s or the 1890s. But digital is new.
Digital is new. Okay, well, we got something there. We've got digital.
That is definitely new, yes.
So do you, we have about a minute. Do you travel, Sue, and give talks?
I do. I travel widely. This year I'm going to Iowa, to Ohio. I'm going to New Hampshire. I'll be going to Paducah, Kentucky. I travel all over the United States giving talks on antique quilts and sharing the multiple exhibits and collections that I have that are themed. And so I enjoy that a lot. And meeting people. And, you know, as I say, my new project, Presidential and Patriotic Quilts, is mm-hmm. time to come out for the election year. So if you haven't heard enough about the election on the television or radio, you'll also see it in quilts.
There you go. Well, Sue, this has been fantastic. Thank you for coming on and chatting with me about quilts.
Thank you so much for calling, Pat.
Everybody can visit Sue at coveringquilthistory.com. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish, learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this show is sponsored by Moda Fabrics. You can go out on modabakeshop.com and find all kinds of great stuff. I am very thrilled when I'm able to invite somebody on that I have known in the industry for a really long time, and not only known, but has been kind and a good friend over the years, especially when I was very new. Cindy Taylor Oates may not always remember when she first met me, but I remember when I first met her at the trade show, was just so delighted that she's going to be on here now today to talk about 30 years in the industry. Cindy, thanks for being here.
Hey, Pat. Thanks for having me.
You were so nice to me when I was a newbie.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I usually try to be really encouraging to people. I have people approach me at every show, and I'm always willing to tell anything I know about anything. So.
It's always nice. I mean, there are a few people that I think we all look back on when we started our any kind of career that sort of were kind and gave us tips. And you're in my little sphere. You're in my.
Oh.
So, Cindy, how did you ever think you would be in this industry for 30 years when you started?
I don't know if anybody could predict 30 years in the future in any career that they're in, to tell you the truth, but it's been a joy for me the people are really, really friendly. And I mean, the evolution of the business is so interesting to have watched.
Mm-hmm. I just loved your booth at market. I showed it on my website.
I saw that. Oh, that was fun. That was really fun to pull out every single cover of every pattern in every book over the 30 years. And people, lights coming up and reminiscing. And, oh, I made that and I made that. Yeah. And, well, I had some really bad hair in some of those pictures. And my daughter, who is, I think she's 28 now, and she was helping me this year. And, you know, I could point back to a picture where she was just 6 months old and I was holding her. And that was kind of funny. I go, look, here she is now. And there she was then.
The magic wand. She's all grown
up. Exactly.
So tell me a little bit about your background. What did you ever study? I know you studied some design. So just tell me about that.
I was always interested in sewing. I just, you know, really insisted I learn how to sew from my mother. And I made a lot of clothes when I was growing up, when I was in junior high and high school. And so I wanted to be, a clothing designer. And so my background is in fashion design. I went to University of Texas and studied clothing and textiles. And then when I graduated, I moved back to Dallas, which is where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to get a job as a fashion designer. And the first job I had was at a place, it was called Stockton Manufacturing. Mm-hmm. It's now Loft Apartments, which is, that's what has happened. Yeah. But anyway, so what I would do, I would design, you know, draw it, sketch it, make the first pattern. I would be selecting fabrics. I'd cut it out. And then I have a sample maker who would sew the garment for me. And then the process is you go to send it to pricing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And those days, that job, I was doing coordinated groups for Sears and Penney's, and that was when polyester double knit was queen. And
oh my gosh,
I had the biggest scissors to cut that layers of polyester double knit. But that company was just really known for their pull-on pants and like I said, coordinated groups, so jackets and a little shell and that would go on a round rack. And so basically I was designing clothes that my mother would wear, you know. Mm-hmm. And then after a few years there, I went to another company where I was doing junior dresses, which, you know, as I was just in my 20s, I liked that a lot better.
Right.
That was a lot more fun. And there I even had a pattern maker and a sample maker, so I didn't have to make the patterns anymore.
But
you know, the what would happen is like every few days we'd have the reps from the fabric companies come by and we'd look at fabric and pick out fabric and things. Loved, loved, loved that job. And it involved going to New York City 2 to 4 times a year to shop for fabrics there. We'd go to all the fabric showrooms and, you know, check out things on, trends on the street and in stores and everything. Loved, loved it.
Oh, my gosh. I have made some of your clothing patterns in the past, and they were easy to do, and now I know why. It's because you know how to design clothing. That's
And plus I learned a lot from my sample maker. She sat in the same room with me in my office, and so, you know, and the way things are manufactured is a little different than the home sewer, so I kind of use a lot of some of the things I've learned through there.
Smart, smart girl. Well, that must have been a hard job to give up. It sounds like it was kind of a dream job.
It was my dream job.
Yeah.
But my husband got transferred to Houston. And at that time, you probably even less opportunity now, but you could design in L.A. and New York and Dallas. Dallas probably, I'm really not sure what the state of design in Dallas is now, truthfully. Mm-hmm. But, a lot of things are done overseas.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I did love that job. My husband did get transferred and had to give that up. And I was okay with it because we were ready to have a baby. And I wanted to kind of be a stay-at-home mom. And the design job did take a lot of time, more than just like it wasn't just a 9-to-5 all the time. Mm-hmm. So I was okay with that. But I did used to dream at night that I had that job back.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it would just be a kind of a reoccurring dream until I started my business. And then I didn't have that dream anymore. So
Oh, isn't that
That's
okay.
how fulfilling my job is now.
Oh, yeah. You know, that is so interesting, what you dream about. Okay, so you
Now
moved.
I just dream that I forget to take something to the trade show. I think, oh, I had a dream. Oh, I forgot the books, or I forgot the samples, or whatever.
Right. So when you moved, you were not a quilt maker yet, or worked in that world.
I think I may have made a quilt for a friend, and it was not much to see, I will tell you. But I had been designing some projects for a magazine that was a sewing and a craft magazine. So I had done that, and then I was selling and sewing and making things to sell at craft shows.
Oh.
And I met a woman, Diane Giles, who had a quilt store. I wish I could remember the name of it. There weren't even that many there then, but I'm sure
somebody will call and tell me, or write and tell
me.
Yeah,
they'll tell you. Diane Giles, it was on West Gray. Anyway, she took me to Quilt Market. We were only in Houston 2 years, and she took me to Quilt Market in the spring right before we moved to Arizona, which is where I am now. And it just was like a light bulb moment. Oh, okay. I can design something and write the directions and share my patterns, you know.
So the trade show environment, because of the business you had been in, was a very familiar format for you.
Very, very much so, because I was in a wholesale business, and this is a wholesale show.
Right, right. It's like when I went to the first one, I came from working in computers. So, you know, it was just like a total, like being landed on Mars. I'm like, I have no idea what any of this. It wasn't a quilt show. I knew that. I mean, but I couldn't really, it was harder to get sort of in tune with wholesale show when it's new for you. Now, when you started like 30 years ago, was there a lot of clothing being done in the quilt world?
No, there was very little clothing.
Okay.
So that, you know, I came to the first market I went to. I took a quilt that was called Peekaboo Bears, and then it also had a little dress in it and a quilt and a pillow, I think. And then there were two patterns, one for a sweatshirt with quilting and one with a vest with quilting. So three patterns. Get a boost.
Yeah. So
cast boost.
So, Cindy, when you started doing, like, when you left that first trade show, you went with the lady, and then you moved and everything. Who are you thinking about as your client? Because when I found it interesting, when you were designing clothes for like your mother, and then you got design clothes for like yourself, and now you went into this other world. Who did you think of as who your customer would be?
Do you know what? I mean, that's a really good question, and I'd say that the thing that both of those jobs had in common was that it was just kind of middle America. It wasn't really high style necessarily. It was just, you know, it was kind of more for
everyday
middle America.
People.
For everyday people. And that's how I dress. And so that's how, you know, it's really, I was just making clothes that I would want to wear. And hopefully other people would want to wear too.
So when you decided to make this first pattern, was it a booklet like you're known for?
Well, I used to do patterns exclusively. You know, I started with three patterns, and then the reason I did go to books eventually was because I couldn't find anybody to stuff the patterns. You know, even my kids, when they were teenagers, they couldn't make a dime doing anything, and they wouldn't even do it. So I switched to the booklet format so that I didn't have to stuff them anymore.
Ah, so when you started out, you did the traditional single pattern, and the sheets
Correct.
Were folded and all of that. Okay,
yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you had your first booth, I mean, I just am like, I know when I met you early on, the thing that fascinated
me. What year did you start, Pat?
I started about 15 years ago.
Okay.
And I think maybe a little bit longer, actually, because I did one show. I did some shows with Indigo Junction. I was working with them. So I probably met you when I did the very first one. But then a couple of years I did stuff with Indigo because I still worked a day job. And I remember talking to you. This always stuck in my head because I was really didn't want to do the booth by myself. And you always did your booth by yourself. And
I did.
Oh, my gosh, what a woman. You come to here, you haul all this stuff, and then you don't even bring anybody with you. That's like,
Well, that's true. Well, you know, that's called doing it on the cheap. So.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that really is the truth of it. And I'm lucky because my brother and sister-in-law live in Houston. So when we go to that trade show, I always get to stay with them. And they're some of my favorite people. So that's just like a double bonus, a free place to stay. And, you know, and you get to be around your favorite people.
Yeah, but
I always traveled with somebody. I always traveled, like with Loreen Cinema, if you remember her.
Yes.
She and I were travel buddies for a long time. And then Renee Plains, she and I traveled together. She had a booth of her own, and we would just kind of help each other. Next to each other or across from each other so that we could say, oh, she'll be right back. She, you know.
Yeah. You watch all the stuff so you don't have to take everything. Yeah, that's like...
Exactly.
So, since you had been to trade shows, had you worked a booth before when you did your first booth? Was that the very first time you had to?
No,
set
that
up
was
then?
The first time I had done something like that. And back then, it was in the Shamrock Hotel.
Oh, that's
in the basement of the Shamrock Hotel. So, and I was like in the back room of the basement of the Shamrock Hotel, and I had a half booth. And back then, now as you know, when you have a half booth, it's like 10 feet wide and 5 feet deep. But back then it was the opposite. They literally just ran a pole down a booth. So it was 10 feet long and 5 feet wide across, you know, so that
it
was pretty.
Entice everybody to come into this deep cavern of a booth.
Yeah, exactly. This little cavern of a booth, you know, like, come on in. But I only had three things, so, you know, didn't really matter.
Yeah, just hang them out there in the front and say, here they are. That's like,
and the other half was like hot off the press, if you remember who that is. I mean, she was next to me. And then Design Originals was next to me on the other side.
Oh, wow.
And both long-standing companies, too.
Right. Well, that was probably not a bad spot for your first time to have established companies
time,
next to you.
No, they were all first-timers, too, I believe.
Oh, okay. Well, and there, that
and
was the newbie section.
Yeah, that was totally the new section. But people were really, really nice to me and encouraging and everything. So,
we're going to take a break here in a second, and then when we come back, I want to talk a bit about the patterns you're doing now, and you have some things on American Patchwork and Quilting's website. So we'll be right back after the break.
Okay, very good.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking to Cindy Taylor Oates of Taylor Made Designs. Okay, Cindy, somebody wrote me about the quilt shop.
Oh my gosh, like they Twittered or did something.
Yeah,
like
they sent me an email. So here it is.
Cool.
It's C Hikes sent me this note. She says, was it the quilt patch on West Gray in Houston? I think that was it.
not ringing the bell for me.
Okay, that one's not ringing the bell. Maybe somebody else will write while I'm sitting here or afterwards. Okay, we're looking for Cindy's quilt shop that she first entered. Okay, so let's talk about your patterns a little bit, because they are so well done. And now that we know that you are a fantastic designer that made everyday clothing that we all probably bought, or our grandmas did, or somebody bought. What is your goal for your pattern making?
Well, I want to make a pattern that's appealing. And anyone who's familiar with my books, I always try to put a lot in there. I try to give a very good value. So you're not just going to get one thing when you buy one of those books. And really that came from, do you remember who Vanessa Ann was with the cross stitch books and stuff? Do you remember back from the late 80s or the early 90s?
A little bit, yeah.
They always just had chock full of ideas. And I thought, I guess that was really my template and inspiration for doing that. So there's never just one thing. So I try to give a really good value and a lot of ideas, and I strive to make the instructions understandable. That's always high praise for me if somebody says, those instructions are great, because I do that too. I pretty much do everything. I write it. I do it, in Illustrator, and have it sent off to be printed and stuff.
Yeah, when you when you're working like on a shirt, let's say, because then you'll give like a shirt that's plain and a shirt with details and a shirt that's long and a shirt that's short, right?
Yep, several variations, or like the one of my most popular books is the So Easy Pajama Pants. Well, I just that's been out for quite a long time, and I just revamped it, and so now there's a short. There wasn't a short in it before, so you can make it a short, a capri. You can make it long. You can make it with ruffles. You can make it without ruffles.
And there's a pillowcase and a tote bag.
And a bag in there to boot. So, yeah.
I know. I have that one sitting right here with me we're talking. Yeah, because I have made them. So
very good.
That's right. That's right. You also have been a regular contributor to American Patchwork and Quilting's family of magazines, and some of the projects are online, so people can just go put your name in the search bar at allpeoplequilt.com. But I had pulled out two different ones, and I thought maybe, just so we could talk about them. One, because I need to make a new bag. So there was a project you have out there for a tote bag that has half square triangles and little bitty four patches.
Right. That's kind of like a little teeny purse, really. You're not going to tote too much around in that bag, but you could just make it bigger. But it is pretty. It's a very pretty bag.
I like the patchwork part of it, because a lot of us have, our scraps. So that's a great one to do. Is there a tip for making those nice handles? What makes a nice handle on a bag?
I don't remember what that bag has in it, but typically what I do is I use, I'll think of it in a minute. Okay. I don't
mean like the stuffing in it?
Like the flat. Why can't it? It's like what you buy in the belting section, only it's cotton.
Like webbing?
Webbing. Thank you. I like the cotton webbing and covered cotton webbing. So I like to just make the tube, make it a little bit bigger, and then, run that through with a straight pin and top stitch on either side. That way you have a little bit of cushioning on the handle, and it's going to be substantial. It's better than interfacing or even batting or something. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite.
Okay. So is it now, when you're doing that cotton webbing in there, do you need to have your walking foot on? Do you need to make your stitch longer?
You know what? I always have the walking foot on pretty much when I'm sewing. I sew on a FOF, and it has a walking foot that you can just engage, or the dual feed is what it has. It has dual feed. So I pretty much sew with dual feed all the time.
Do with the webbing then, would we need to elongate the straight stitch when we top stitch the edges, or would just your regular size be okay?
It's all, just regular.
Okay. All right,
yeah,
that's
just
good.
Regular, just run it right through there. You just have to remember, so say if it's an inch wide, mm-hmm. and you're going to cut it, you know, the 2 inches, the strip will be 2 inches, plus mm-hmm. if it's a quarter inch seam, you need a half an inch, but then you need to add another quarter inch just for the volume that's going to take up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you won't be able to thread it through there. So you'd cut a strip 2¾ inch wide to finish for that 1 inch.
Yeah, because of the bulk, because that webbing's got some thickness to it. Okay. The other one, which is just fun, and I believe you did this first with a Christmas tree, and then it's done with Easter eggs, is
they did the Easter egg.
Yeah.
I did
you did the Christmas tree where you covered, mm-hmm. like, this little tree with yo-yos, little mini yo-yos. How did you...
Styrofoam cone.
Oh, styrofoam cones.
Styrofoam cone. And then it's got three different sizes of those yo-yos with a button in the middle. It's very fun to make. Yo-yos are great, you know, because you can just sit and watch TV and make those.
Mindless. They're just
mindless.
Sort of- Yeah.
Yes.
When you did the buttons, are they actually sewn to the yo-yo first?
I think I just pinned it through and through.
Oh.
Just pinned the button. Yeah, you know, the whole thing is just pinned on. After you make the whole bunch of yo-yos, you start at the bottom and go around and put a pin through the buttonhole and through the yo-yo. And that attaches it all to the tree.
Oh.
And then I stitched and then I glued it to a candlestick to make mm-hmm. a little base for the tree.
It's gorgeous. The tree one is just gorgeous. And you did them, I think, all in red. It's really pretty.
They're green.
Or maybe it was green because it was a tree.
Yeah, they're green.
Oh,
green.
Sorry. memory lapse there. Sorry.
But you could make you could make a red Christmas tree.
I could. Yeah. I think I have red on my brain because I wanted to ask you about red work. Yes. You have some interesting sort of ways for people to create red work. What do you love about it?
Again, I like that you can just sit and do red work anywhere, that it's such a portable project. And I've designed several red work books and patterns, and I've used it on clothing. I have a shirt that has a Santa on it. I did several baby quilt projects for American Patchwork and Quilting as well.
So what?
And those were actual designs that I did. But for someone who doesn't want to, you know, maybe they are ready to go today and they want to make it. If you look back through your collection of patterns, maybe you have a Baltimore album, any line drawing that you have can be turned into a red work pattern just by tracing it to your fabric and using that. So a children's coloring book would work. Any applique pattern that you already have would be, you know, seems obvious, but maybe somebody didn't know that.
Right. Well, you know, I think people don't, sometimes we don't think about it because, like, for me, a lot of my applique are done as individual shapes so that the picture isn't there on the page. And I also use big shapes, so it's harder to translate that down into a smaller red work. But there are people, like you said, that the Baltimore albums or other smaller mm-hmm. appliques that you could just trace around it.
Exactly. And, you know, I think another thing, if you do have a shape that's a little bit bigger, if you're using a background, instead of just like muslin or solid white, if you'd use a background that has a little bit of texture to it, like mm-hmm. a white-on-white print or a cream-on-white print or a dot or something, that just adds a little more interest to it to begin with.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
a
remember,
really good
it doesn't
tip.
Have to be done in red.
Yeah. I know. You get really focused on that red.
Yeah, which is pretty, but sometimes blue, or just depends what you're doing.
I've seen it with purple one time, a stitchery all done with purple. It was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
So what is your newest patterns that you have out on the market?
The new one that I had at the last market is called So Cute Critters. And I think it's right in the middle of that picture that you put on. That's mm-hmm. my daughter in the picture there, by the way. She's like I said, she helped me out. She's a great help. But anyway, So Cute Critters applique. It's a children's quilt. And then in keeping with the tradition, it's got a lot of examples of using those same designs on clothing, even adult clothing.
They're so cute.
And a cute little backpack, too.
Yes, that I was.
And they're all wearing
glasses,
you know.
Yes.
They're very hipster. They're very hipster.
I love the owl with the glasses, and there's a dog and a frog, a mouse and a cat. Oh, my goodness. And then
and
the
I haven't
two
done.
Go ahead.
I haven't done applique in quite a long time, but, you know, I was looking back through the covers and things. And, of course, you know, we used to wear applique clothing all the time back in the 90s. That was, you know, all the books I've always loved applique. Now people don't wear it quite as much, or it's a little more, or it's just different.
It's different, right?
Yeah.
I noticed more people are wearing T-shirts with great big words across the front. That's what I've been noticing. And they have a lot of sewing ones out. So it's just a matter of time, Cindy. They'll just be putting shapes on those too. So it won't be long.
That's like, won't
you got
be long.
The words, you're going to have something else on there soon. Now, these guys, you and your daughter, what's your daughter's name?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
She's the younger
daughter.
You both
wore big, huge glasses in your booth. It was so cute.
Oh, thanks.
Now, does she work with you all the time?
She does not. Now, she's helped me. She used to live just about 3 minutes from me, and she would help me sometimes do the shipping and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then she was the drama teacher at the high school here, which just took up all of her time. And now she's moved to Indiana. She recently, in May, she moved to Indiana. She got married a year ago. And for his job, they've gone to Indiana.
Sounds like what happened to you. You moved.
I know. So anyway, so now she has a little more time on her hands. So she helped me at the last market, and she's going to be in Minneapolis helping me again.
Oh, fantastic.
She's really kind of a beginner. She's never really sewed that much before, but she's excited, and she's been sewing some things. She's been sending me some pictures, and she's kind of a good pattern tester because she is such a beginner. I can send it to her, and she'll let me know. I didn't understand this, or I did.
Well, Cindy, this has been so fantastic. Thank you for being here.
Well, Pat, it just has flown by, and thank you for having me.
Everybody can visit Cindy out at TaylorMade Designs online and check out all of her work. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can come back next week. I'll have a whole new show with more people. You can visit allpeoplequilt.com and sign up for their newsletter. Visit me at patsloan.com. We both are on Facebook. We have Facebook pages. I have a Facebook group, Quilt Along with Pat Sloan. Very active, very fun. I can't wait to see what you're making. We'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.